We transition fully now to the book of 1 Samuel. We've finished all of the stories that are in the book of the Judges, but we're still in the period of the Judges. And I've been developing with you my own belief that Samuel and Samson were contemporaries. I believe that they were conceived and born right around the same time, and that God used Samson first to break the power of the Philistines in his lifetime, which we just finished that story. And then Samuel, who was already functioning as the prophet of Israel at Shiloh, took over that responsibility after the tabernacle at Shiloh was destroyed. And we're going to talk about that event today. Now let me reconstruct for you my chronological belief that Samson died in the summertime of 1057 BC. He collapsed the temple of Dagon down upon himself and thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of Philistines that he counted as his enemies and the enemies of He Who Is. And he killed also the five lords of the Philistines that were gathered there in that facility to praise their God's victory over the God of the Hebrews. I believe that the new regimes of the five cities of the Philistines decided they could not let this assault of their religion by the suicidal Samson go unanswered. And that is why, as we turn to 1 Samuel, the Philistines were mobilized to a place called Aphek. And so here we are, 1 Samuel chapter 4, where it says, "The word of Samuel came to all Israel." So he's acting as their prophet. "Now Israel went out to battle against the Philistines." They're responding to a Philistine threat. "They encamped at Ebenezer, and the Philistines camped at Aphek." Now Aphek, that we're talking about here, is located roughly 10 or so miles northeast of the modern airport at Tel Aviv. So we're talking about a dozen miles to the west of downtown Tel Aviv. Aphek was the entry point if you were going from the Mediterranean coast, the flatlands there, up past Timnath-Sera, which is the ancient city of the great prophet and commander Joshua, and then from there up to Shiloh, where the tabernacle is located. It's roughly about 25 road miles from Aphek up to Shiloh. So they are clearly on their way to the central shrine of the Israelis, and their intention is to destroy it. The Israelis realize that this is a tit-for-tat move, that this is a reprisal move, and so they mobilize. And somewhere in that wadi between Timnath-Sera and Aphek is this place called Ebenezer. And that's where they try to barricade the approach to the shrine of He Who Is. Verse number 2. "The Philistines drew up in line against Israel, And when the battle spread, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men on the field of battle. So the first engagement results in 4,000 fatalities for the militia forces of the Israelis. Verse 3, when the troops came to the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Why has he who is defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Covenant of he who is here from Shiloh, that it may come among us and save us from the power of our enemies." So for the past 20 years, during the military judgeship of Samson, the Israelis have been victorious in whatever engagements they had on the borderlands with the Philistines. But in this first post-Samson engagement, they believe they've been abandoned on the field of battle by God. And instead of going through a thinking process of, I wonder what we might have done wrong that God is not on our side, they went to the idea common amongst the pagans of that ancient region. We don't have God's presence in our camp because the Ark of the Covenant is not here. The pagans believed that the power of a god radiated from their image, their idol. And the closer you were to the idol, the more powerful that god was. So they believed that gods were regional, and their power waned the farther away from the power base you went. So they believe what really needs to happen is they have to bring God, which they're thinking God is centered in the Ark of the Covenant, as if that's some sort of idol. They need to bring the Ark of the Covenant down to the battlefield so that his full power can be utilized. So they're thinking like pagans. And this is, again, representative of the period of the judges for us. There was no king in Israel in those days, and every man did as he saw fit in his own eyes. They make up their own rules. So verse 4, the people sent to Shiloh and brought from there the Ark of the Covenant of he who is over the armies. It's Yahweh Tzabaoth, God's divine name followed by the Hebrew word for armies in the plural. It had been around for a long time. It was the idea that God is, he's got his angelic army, but he also has the army of Israel. So they sent and brought the Ark of the Covenant of he who is over the armies, who is enthroned on the cherubim. Remember the two four-faced, four-winged angelic beings that are on each end of this throne of God. It's been a while since I reminded you. The Ark of the Covenant is not a highly decorated storage box. It is, in fact, a portable throne. And the two four-faced, four-winged angels are on each end, and their wings, at least one set of them, apparently go up over the top like some sort of canopy. And so the picture that was intended by this artwork is that God is seated on this throne, and he speaks from between the cherubim. But they're bringing his throne into the battle zone because they think that he will work better if he's present in the immediate vicinity. The two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant. And as soon as the Ark of the Covenant of he who is came into the camp, all Israel gave a mighty shout so that the earth resounded. So they're all excited because they're under this belief system that their powerful God is now in their presence. And the Philistines, well, they're pagans. They're idolatrous people. They kind of go along with that belief system. Verse 6, when the Philistines heard the noise of the shouting, they said, "What does this great shouting in the camp of the Hebrews mean?" And when they learned that the ark of He Who Is had come into the camp, the Philistines were afraid, for they said, "A god has come into the camp." And they said, "Woe to us, for nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us, who can deliver us from the power of these mighty gods?" Remember, in the Hebrew, the word Elohim is technically plural. And so the Israelis are constantly referring to Yahweh, or He Who Is, in a plural form. So they're thinking that this is one of many idols, perhaps, that these Israelis have, but this is the most powerful one. These are the gods who struck the Egyptians with every sort of plague in the wilderness. Take courage and be men, O Philistines, lest you become slaves to the Hebrews as they have been to you. Be men and fight. So the Philistines, functioning with their superstition, they're concerned, quite concerned, that the idol, that's the way they would have perceived it, the idol of the Hebrews is now on the battlefield, radiating all of that power that they've heard about through the centuries that was exercised over the Egyptians. Now, they probably have their god idol as well, Dagon, in their camp, but they're concerned at the power of this Yahweh, this He Who Is of the Israelis. So they encourage each other, we have to fight even harder. We have to fight on behalf of our God. So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated. Now, if they had been living by the covenant, if they had been living under the truth that their God, He Who Is, was their king, and that they needed to follow His directives, this would never have happened. But God had warned them through the prophet Moses hundreds of years before, "If you abandon the covenant, I will abandon you when you try to fight." So they are defeated. Verse number 10 goes on and says, they fled, every man to his home. And there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. So they lost 4,000 on the first day and lost an additional 30,000 the second day. They're routed and they break and scatter. Verse 11, and the ark of God was captured, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. And so this is the fulfillment of the prophecy many years earlier, that because these two men are horrendous, they are flesh-centered men. They are not godly. They have only been looking out for themselves, even though they're supposed to be the priests of God Most High. The prophecy was they would die in the exact same day. And they did. And the ark is captured. And God doesn't even defend the ark at this point. He does not destroy any of the Philistines who touch the ark. Verse number 12, a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes torn and with dirt on his head. So one of the Benjamite fighters, when he runs away from the battlefield, he figures he needs to go and warn the people at Shiloh, the tabernacle, because that's where this Philistine army is headed. Verse 13, when he arrived, Eli was sitting on his seat by the road watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. He did not have the physical power or apparently the respected authority to stop the ark from being taken from the tabernacle. His sons apparently wielded more authority with the people than he did, even though he is technically the judge of Israel and has been for the last 40 years. He's supposed to have been the spiritual judge, while Samson for the last 20 years has been the military judge. So when the man came into the city and told the news, all the city cried out. When Eli heard the sound of the outcry, he said, "What's this uproar?" And the man hurried and came and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old. So that means he was 58 when he came to the high priesthood 40 years earlier. And he's done a horrible job of it. He was 98 years old, and his eyes were set so that he could not see. And that means that he has not functioned physically as the high priest for some time. He has the name of high priest, the name of judge, but it's all just honorary, because you cannot function as a priest if you've got a physical disability, such as you're blind. And the man said to Eli, "I am he who has come from the battle. I fled from the battle today." And he, meaning Eli, said, "How did it go, my son?" He who brought the news answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has also been a great defeat among the people. Your two sons, also Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God has been captured." And as soon as he mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell over backward from his seat by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for the man was old and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. So the judgment of God now comes upon the bad high priest Eli as well, and he dies the same day that his own two sons died in fulfillment of a great prophecy of judgment. Now, verse 18. His daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, was pregnant. So Phinehas probably is in his 60s or so, but his wife is pregnant with a child. And she was about to give birth, so she was in her ninth month. When she heard the news that the ark of God was captured and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed and gave birth, for her pains came upon her. So the stress of hearing all of this puts her into early labor, and it's a bad labor. It's a labor that's going to kill her. About the time of her death, the women attending her said to her, "Do not be afraid, for you have borne a son." But she did not answer or pay attention. So they're telling her, "Come on, you've got to hang in there. You've got to survive. You've got a baby boy." But the last thing that she utters before she dies is the naming of this child. She named the son Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel." And the reason she did this was because the ark of God had been captured, and because of her father-in-law and her husband, and also her brother-in-law, and the death of all of those Israelis. Ich has to do with departure, and Avod has to do with glory. So the glory of God, the Ark of the Covenant, His divine throne on earth, is gone. And so too, the priesthood. It's gone. The glory has departed. She said, "The glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God has been captured." And then she dies. Now, before we go to chapter number 5, which follows the ark as it's led away from Israeli territory to Philistine territory, we need to follow up with what happened at Shiloh at this time. For whatever reason, the prophet writing this section of 1 Samuel did not fill in the gaps of how the Philistines continued their march into the heart of Israeli territory and destroyed the city of Shiloh and destroyed the tabernacle. Now, they probably didn't get a hold of the other bits of furniture like the menorah, the seven-branched lampstand, and the table of the bread of the presence, probably didn't even get a hold of the altar. Those things may have been carted away because they will eventually show up again in the next tabernacle that will be established down to the south in a place called Gibeon. But I want to read to you from Psalm 78 and from Jeremiah chapter 7, which both describe this destruction of this tabernacle at Shiloh. Psalm number 78, we're going to start at verse 56 because the context in these passages is about the judgment of God which brought this destruction. And it's important that that not be forgotten. So Psalm 78, verse 56 says, "Yet they tested and rebelled against the Most High God, did not keep his testimonies, but turned away and acted treacherously like their fathers. They twisted like a deceitful bow, for they provoked him to anger with their high places. They moved him to jealousy with their idols." So that's a description of Israel in this time of the judges, when there wasn't a very strong judge maintaining control, the Israelis descended down into the paganism of the Canaanites. And how did God respond? Verse 59. "When God heard, he was full of wrath, and he utterly rejected Israel. He forsook his dwelling at Shiloh, the tent where he dwelt among mankind, and delivered his power to captivity, his glory to the hand of the foe." That's a reference to the Ark of the Covenant being permitted to be carted away by the Philistines. Verse 62, "He gave his people over to the edge of the sword and vented his wrath on his heritage. Fire devoured their young men, and their young women had no marriage song. Their priests fell by the sword, and their widows made no lamentation. And then the Lord awoke as from sleep, like a strong man shouting because of wine, and he put his adversaries to rout and put them to everlasting shame." Now that comes up later. That's once the repentance happens and Samuel begins functioning fully as the sole judge of Israel, both militarily and spiritually. At this point, let's go to the book of Jeremiah. Very important context. Jeremiah is the last major prophet before the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians at God's permission. And Jeremiah is warning them. This is coming. The judgment of God is coming. It is because of our sin as a nation that he is going to destroy his sanctuary and allow his people to be taken in captivity. And some of the people thought that that couldn't happen because God would never allow his temple to be destroyed. So Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 8. Behold, you trust in deceptive words to no avail. Will you steal, murder, commit adultery, swear falsely, make offerings to Baal, and go after other gods that you've not known, and then come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, oh, we're delivered, only to go on doing all these abominations? Has this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes? Behold, I myself have seen it, declares he who is. Now you recognize Jesus quoted from that, or the Gospels quote from that, about Jesus cleansing the temple. Now, verse 12, go now to my place that was in Shiloh, where I made my name dwell at first, and see what I did to it because of the evil of my people Israel. And now, because you have done all these things, declares he who is, and when I spoke to you persistently, you didn't listen, and when I called you, you didn't answer. Therefore, I will do to the house that is called by my name, and in which you trust, and to the place that I gave to you and all your fathers, as I did to Shiloh. And I will cast you out of my sight, as I cast out all your kinsmen, all the offspring of Ephraim. So God's warning through the prophet Jeremiah is, you think that the temple is a magic talisman that's going to protect you? How did that work out for the Israelis at Shiloh when they thought that I would uphold them in their sinfulness just because they resorted to the temple or to the tabernacle there and to the Ark of the Covenant? It didn't work out. And so Jeremiah brings this history into play. Well, when we get back tomorrow and finish this part of the story, we will follow the ark as it leaves Israeli territory and goes to one of the shrines of Baal that the Philistines still have to worship their god in.